Last week, we went back to or started reconsidering our theme for the year, which is learn to know God and to become like Him. And we have talked about it several times throughout the year so far. It's one of those themes, as I mentioned last week, that is not just a short two-word expression like some of the ones that we've looked at, or one-word expression, but is a great theme, one that I think is very biblical, one that is important for us to try to embrace. It's based primarily upon a passage in the third chapter of the book of Colossians, one that we used as kind of a jumping-off point at the beginning of the year to try to develop our theme, and it's one that we discussed together. Actually, it's a much longer passage, but verse 10 in Colossians chapter 3 says, "Put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like Him." That's after Paul said to put off a bunch of things and then to put on this new nature. And so that's what we're trying to do with this theme. We're trying to think about this concept of learning to know what God really is like, our Creator, and to try to imitate Him, to try to be like Him in whatever ways that we can. And that's what God wants from us. He wants us to try to embrace that. And so we've, in the course of this study so far, looked at a number of things. But last week, we began kind of a short, what I guess I could call maybe a mini-series of lessons that started last week, focusing on relationships, because part of being like God and trying to imitate Him, a big part of that, and much of the New Testament focuses on this, has to do with our relationships with other people. And we can look at God and some of His characteristics and some of the things that we see that impress us so much about God, and we can imitate those in our relationships. And so we need to try to learn in our relationships with one another how to act like God would want us to act. And part one last week was just on the basics of trying to create and build and strengthen those relationships, with our main focus on trying to create new relationships. We've talked recently in our Wednesday night study that ended a couple weeks ago, we've talked about trying to share the gospel with other people and trying to build upon some of the relationships that we might have with those around us. And maybe we don't have enough of those. Maybe we don't have enough relationships with people in the world in order to share something with them. And so I admitted last week that I'm certainly no expert in this. As somewhat of an introvert, new relationships are sometimes difficult. And yet it's something that I think we've got to strive for as much as we can, to build these relationships that God wants us to have. God did not make us to be isolated. He did not create us to be non-social people. He wants us to be social. And it would be easy for me and others who are introverted to say, well, that's just the way I am, and so, you know, I'm not going to try to have relationships with other people. We've got to work to overcome some of those things that might be obstacles in our relationships with one another. And so as we focused on that last week, we talked about some of the things that we might need in order to try to create and build and strengthen relationships. And I'm sure there's a lot of other things we could add to this list. As I said, I'm certainly not an expert, but I think we at least need to have a genuine desire to be friendly to everyone, and to not have lines of separation that we might arbitrarily draw that separate us from people who are maybe not just like us in some way. And so we need to have that genuine desire to be friendly to all. We need to have a genuine desire to not be hurtful, and to be mindful of that, to make sure that we don't hurt people's feelings, that we don't offend people in our words and in our actions, to you know, create unnecessary separation between us. We need to have a genuine desire to get to know people. And that gets difficult sometimes because getting to know people means that we get to know some of the things that we're not so comfortable with. And they get to know some of the things that they're not so comfortable with in us. And so getting to know people is difficult as we learn each other's flaws and faults. But that's part of having a relationship that's real. I mean, we can keep it very superficial by never revealing any of our, or trying to never reveal any of our faults or mistakes, but that doesn't last very long usually. So a real relationship includes some baggage, and we need to be willing to embrace that. And then fourthly, we talked about last week, we need to have a genuine desire to try to help people and to receive help from other people and to do so sacrificially. And we certainly see that modeled in Jesus, and we talked about that somewhat last week. I want to build upon that, try to build upon that this morning, and talk about part two about relationships, and that is considering the thought of having grace-based relationships. Grace-based relationships. A few weeks ago, we... In one of my sermons, I talked about the book of Philemon, and it's a book that we've studied in the past, and I think one of the main reasons that the book of Philemon is even included in our Bibles is because it really is about those that receive grace, like Philemon, need to extend that grace to other people, like in that case, Onesimus. Onesimus, who was the runaway slave who was returned by Paul to Philemon with this letter, Paul was encouraging Philemon to receive him not as a runaway slave, but as a brother, and to extend grace to him because grace had been extended to Philemon. And that's really the picture of New Testament Christianity, that those who receive grace should extend grace to other people. So, building upon that thought and trying to understand that basic concept that those who receive grace should extend grace, what does that look like in terms of our everyday relationships with one another? So let's look at a passage that will help us, I think, where Jesus talked about this. He didn't use some of the same expressions. He didn't use grace-based relationships as a phrase here, but I think that's what he's talking about. And it's in Luke chapter 6. It's a little further down from where we were studying in our class this morning. We'll get there in our auditorium class probably in a couple weeks. But starting in verse 32, this is similar to Matthew's account of the Sermon on the Mount in chapters 5, 6, and 7 of the book of Matthew. At least this is Jesus saying some very similar things in Luke's gospel. Here, starting verse 32, Jesus speaking says, "If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them." So Jesus is saying that's normal. It's normal for everyone to love people that love them in return. But Jesus is saying to take it a step further, and I think he's talking about grace-based relationships, even though, again, he doesn't use that expression. He explains, if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners and get back the same amount. But love your enemies. Which automatically, if we just stop there for a second, think about that. To love your enemy requires grace. It has to. There's no other way to love your enemy but to think in terms of a grace-based relationship. Love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the great ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. He could have just as easily said, practice grace-based relationships because that's what your Father does, right? He continues, judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. He also told them a parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye, when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. Okay, so we're probably fairly familiar with this passage. Again, there's a parallel that's very similar in the Gospel of Matthew. It's Jesus talking about relationships. And much of what Jesus said in his teaching was about relationships. And here I believe Jesus is pretty strongly and pretty clearly advocating for grace-based relationships. That we would try to imitate that characteristic that God already has toward us and has demonstrated toward us, and that we should act that way toward other people. So I want to talk about grace-based relationships as much as we can this morning and try to ask and hopefully give some answer to this question of how can I develop grace-based relationships? Well, as with last week's lesson, I know that what I'm going to say is just one tiny small part of what could be said about this subject, but I'm going to suggest two things that I think if we can work on and remember and try to practice these two things, it may not solve everything and it may not totally be about establishing grace-based relationships, but it will help, I think, if we can just do these two things. And the two things are make people feel accepted and make people feel valuable. They're similar. I want to talk about those a little bit. The passage that Josh read as we began this morning was from Romans chapter 15, and I think it addresses this idea of making people feel accepted. In the 14th chapter, Paul talked to the Romans about some of their differences in beliefs, differences in their faith, things that they believed differently and practiced differently. And Paul advised them, cautioned them, warned them, exhorted them to get along anyway, even in spite of those differences that they had, and to love each other. And then he continues that same thought, really, into chapter 15. And starting here in verse 1, he said, we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, to build him up. Think of what Paul is saying here in terms of establishing grace-based relationships. For Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. For whatever was written in former days was written for our instruction, that through endurance and through the encouragement of the Scriptures we might have hope. May the God of endurance and encouragement grant you to live in such harmony with one another, in accord with Christ Jesus, that together you may with one voice glorify God, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. Paul could have tagged on there, learn to know God and become like him, right? In your relationships. And he's saying, in your relationships, you've got to learn to extend grace to other people in the same way that God has extended grace to you. And that begins with, he says, welcoming them, accepting them. Even if you're strong and they're weak, learn to welcome and accept those who are different, those who are weak when you're strong. Interestingly, I think everyone who reads Romans chapter 14 and Romans chapter 15 probably associates themselves with the strong in this passage. It's the normal way of reading that. We read about the strong and the weak and we think, well, I'm the strong and somebody else who's different from me is weak. It might be the other way around. It might be that we're the weak one and the other person's the strong one. That's just one of those things that we automatically assume, I think, when we read through a passage like this. But Paul says you've got to accept the other person and welcome him. Make people feel accepted. Well, what does that involve? Or what does it not involve? Based upon the passage that we read from Luke a moment ago, I think one of the things that we see it not involving is judgment and criticism. If we're going to make people feel accepted, it means that we need to follow what Jesus taught in the passage in Luke when he says, judge not, lest you be judged. Now, I know from my own experience, I know from years and years of studying this passage and discussing this passage with other people and hearing other people discuss this passage, that our tendency is to immediately, when we read Jesus saying, do not judge, our tendency is to say, well, yes, but. There's other places where he says, judge righteous judgment. And so we immediately turn from the do not judge part to other passages that seem to indicate that we're supposed to judge. And unfortunately, what we often do in that case is we just ignore and toss out what Jesus said here about do not judge, and we embrace those other passages that encourage us to make some kind of judgments. We might argue about 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and 6, where Paul is talking to people and telling them to withdraw from someone who's living disorderly, or we might look at other passages, like the one where Jesus said, judge righteous judgment, and so we say, yes, but, and we wind up turning our backs on this passage and forgetting about it. Now, I will admit that Jesus, I don't think, is making an absolute statement when he says, do not judge. It's pretty much impossible to go through life without ever making any judgments of other people. But even though it's not, as I see it, an absolute statement, it's still a pretty powerful statement that Jesus is making when he says, do not judge. Now, he does qualify it, you might say, by explaining that however you judge is going to be judged back on you. But even with that qualification, that's pretty strong. Because I know that I probably don't want to be judged as harshly as I often judge other people. And Jesus said that's what's going to happen. So I think we need to learn, or try to learn, in our relationships to pursue the idea as much as we can of not judging and not criticizing. Now, I've got the word unless up there, and we'll talk about that. But let's look at a couple of passages. In Galatians chapter 6, this is similar to Colossians and similar to Ephesians, where Paul spends a lot of time talking about what God has done for us and then encourages people to act in a certain way because of that. And so here he has talked about putting off certain things, the works of the flesh, and putting on the fruit of the Spirit in chapter 5. And then in chapter 6, in applying all of that, he says here, "Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness." Similar to what he said to the Romans in that passage we read a moment ago about receiving the weaker brother. But here he says, if somebody's, you know, they're guilty of a sin, you know it, they know it. He says, restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. When I read this passage, I've often thought, we need to just meditate on that last statement a lot. Meditate to the point that we would ask ourselves, what is the law of Christ? Well, you fulfill it by bearing one another's burdens. So it must be love one another as I have loved you. That's what Jesus taught. And that's what's fulfilled by bearing one another's burdens. Paul said you'll fulfill the law of Christ when you do that. Another passage, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. Paul said, "I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience." When do you need patience? When somebody's messing up, right? When somebody is offending you, hurting you, doing bad things, that's when you need patience. And he says, bear with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. I think what Paul is saying there is work toward keeping grace-based relationships. When somebody is offensive to you, when somebody disagrees with you, when somebody is wrong on something, when somebody has hurt your feelings, you've got to practice grace. You've got to, with all humility and gentleness, bear with that person in love, which is what grace is all about. So, I've been reading this book that I mentioned last week. It's an old book. It's been around forever. Well, been around since 1937, which is almost forever. But it's a classic. I've heard of it all my life, and I've never read it. So I'm reading it, and I'm enjoying it so far. Written by Dale Carnegie, who died in 1955. It's not a religious book. It's not from a religious Christian perspective, although it mentions God and says a lot of things that I think parallel New Testament Christianity. In the first couple of chapters, he talks about not criticizing. And he tells several anecdotes, several stories about people who don't accept criticism well. And so then he says, "I've had some interesting correspondence with Lewis Laws, who was warden of New York's infamous Sing Sing prison for many years on this subject. And he declared that few of the criminals in Sing Sing regard themselves as bad men." Remember, this was written in 1937, so in the Roaring Twenties, there were a lot of gangsters, and you know, we see that in the movies. And you always hear about Sing Sing in those old movies. And so these guys don't regard themselves as bad men. They are just as human as you and I. So they rationalize, they explain. They can tell you why they had to crack a safe or be quick on the trigger finger. Most of them attempt by a form of reasoning, fallacious or logical, to justify their antisocial acts even to themselves. Consequently, stoutly maintaining that they should never have been imprisoned at all. And he had talked about some of these men in previous stories that he told. He said, "If Al Capone, Two Gun Crowley, Dutch Schultz, and the desperate men and women behind prison walls don't blame themselves for anything, what about the people with whom you and I come in contact? He went on to say, John Wanamaker, founder of the stores that bear his name, once confessed, "I learned 30 years ago that it is foolish to scold. I have enough trouble overcoming my own limitations without fretting over the fact that God has not seen fit to distribute evenly the gift of intelligence." Wanamaker learned this lesson early, but I personally, he is saying, I personally had to blunder through this old world for a third of a century before it even began to dawn upon me that 99 times out of 100, people don't criticize themselves for anything, no matter how wrong it may be. Criticism, and he's giving his opinion here, criticism is futile because it puts a person on the defensive and usually makes him strive to justify himself. Criticism is dangerous because it wounds a person's precious pride, hurts his sense of importance, and arouses resentment. B.F. Skinner, the world-famous psychologist, proved through his experiments that an animal rewarded for good behavior will learn much more rapidly and retain what it learns far more effectively than an animal punished for bad behavior. Later studies have shown that the same applies to humans. By criticizing, we do not make lasting changes and often incur resentment. So he goes on in that first chapter, he goes on to talk about, he gives an example, one that I remember of a foreman in a factory where the workers were required to wear hard hats and they didn't want to and they didn't like them and they often didn't wear them, and he would catch them. And for years, this foreman would just, you know, chew those people out, really get onto them and yell at them and embarrass them because they weren't wearing their hard hat when he caught them. And then he realized, after long experience with that, that what that usually resulted in was that as soon as he turned his back, they took their hat back off. And so he changed his tactics, and he started, instead of castigating them, instead of, you know, embarrassing them and being angry with them, he started talking to them as a friend. And he would start with a question like, "Is your hat, does it not fit right? Is it too small or is it uncomfortable? We can get you a different one." And then he would explain, "You know, the whole reason we have these is so that you don't get hurt. And we don't want you to get hurt." And he said his approach, that change in approach, just changed the results dramatically. Because instead of criticizing and instead of being hostile, he reacted as a friend and then rewarded good behavior. So think about that in your relationships, and think about them being grace-based relationships where you don't criticize and you don't judge. Now, again, you probably have these red flags going, you know, well, what about? So let's talk about the unless. Don't judge or criticize unless. I just want to offer my thoughts about the unless part. Unless what? Unless, first of all, you already have an established relationship. If you don't already have an established relationship and you offer criticism to someone, it's going in one ear and out the other ear. Well, it's probably going to cause a barrier where you never are able to establish a relationship with that person. If the first interaction you have with someone is criticism on their part or on your part, that relationship's going to have a hard time ever getting established. So it's not going to be productive. In most cases, and there may be exceptions, but in most cases, it's not going to be productive to offer any criticism when you don't already have an established, strong relationship with someone. Okay? Secondly, unless you are invited to offer your judgment. Now, there may be some caveats to that. If you're a supervisor in a job, and you have subordinates working for you, you might say you are invited to offer judgment or criticism. It's part of the job. You already have an established relationship. You're in a position of authority over a person. There may be times when you need to give criticism or judgments. But in a friend-to-friend relationship, wait for an invitation. Now, it may not be an official, you know, they're not going to hand you an invitation saying, okay, it's time for you to criticize me. And they may not say those words, would you please offer judgment and criticism to me? But they may talk about something in a way that leads you to feel okay with that. Where you can say, you know, based upon what you've told me, maybe you could have done this a little bit differently. But wait for that before you offer your opinion and your judgment. Thirdly, offer it in a spirit of love and humility. If you're going to offer any judgment or criticism, make sure you do it as one sinner to another, because that's what we are and that's what they are. And if you offer it in a condescending way, a self-righteous way, it's not going to have any effect. And fourthly, don't offer it unless you're willing to accept similar and want similar judgment and criticism from that person. So, again, those are just my thoughts about the unless. Other than that, think about what Jesus said, do not judge. And don't skip to the yes but and turn your back on the do not judge. Okay. So, make people feel accepted, which means don't judge or criticize. But make people feel valuable as well. How do we do that? Well, one of the ways that we do that, I think, is to express sincere appreciation to those people. If we want to establish grace-based relationships, it's going to take more than just not judging. It's going to take some positive steps to build a strong relationship with someone that's based upon expressing that sincere appreciation to someone. In the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie said this. He talks about this, and then he deals with the objections about offering appreciation to people, and he says, well, you know, are you talking about flattery? Because flattery doesn't seem to, you know, that's not a good thing. There are lots of warnings against flattery. And he's saying that's not what I'm talking about. So what's the difference? He says the difference between appreciation and flattery, that is simple. One is sincere and the other insincere. One comes from the heart out, the other from the teeth out. One is unselfish, the other selfish. One is universally admired, the other universally condemned. And he goes on a little bit later. He says, when we're not engaged in thinking about some definite problem, we usually spend about 95% of our time thinking about ourselves. Now, if we stop thinking about ourselves for a while and begin to think of the other person's good points, we won't have to resort to flattery, so cheap and false that it can be spotted almost before it's out of the mouth. One of the most neglected virtues of our daily existence is appreciation. Somehow, we neglect to praise our son or daughter when he or she brings home a good report card. We fail to encourage our children when they first succeed in baking a cake or building a birdhouse. Nothing pleases children more than this kind of parental interest and approval. And those of us who have been children or have children understand that, hopefully. He goes on to say, in our interpersonal relations, we should never forget that all our associates are human beings and hunger for appreciation. It is the legal tender that all souls enjoy. try leaving a friendly trail of little sparks of gratitude on your daily trips. You'll be surprised how they will set small flames of friendship that will be rose beacons on your next visit. I think he was on to something there about how to act toward other people and how to build and strengthen friendships and relationships that are based in grace. He goes on a little bit later to quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said this. He said, "Every man I meet is my superior in some way. In that, I learn of him." What if we could adopt that mentality? What if we, in our day-to-day interactions with other people, would see everyone around us as my superior in some way or another? Even the guy standing on the side of the road holding a sign that's asking for money, there's something that he's better at than I am. Probably a lot of things. And things that I could learn from him. If we can learn to have grace-based relationships where we make people feel accepted and where we make people genuinely feel valuable, I think we will go a long way toward knowing God and becoming more like him. Because that's exactly what God has done to us. Romans chapter 5, verse 8 says, "But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners." God has accepted us and made us feel valuable. So valuable that he gave his son to die for us. So how do we imitate that? Through grace-based relationships with other people, where we accept them and we make them feel valuable. God sees you as valuable. Despite your faults, your flaws, despite my faults, my flaws, God sees me as valuable and gave his son to die for me and for you. If there's some way we can help you this morning, Kevin's going to lead us in a song to encourage us to think about bringing Christ a broken life. Can we help you this morning? Let us know as together we stand and sing.